From KDN, K Community Access Radio in Carbondale, Colorado, in the United States, this is program number 47 of the Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg with laryngitis, which I'm sure you'll hear throughout the show. When blind people go places, we don't experience things like our sighted friends. We don't see beautiful mountains or romantic sunsets. The goal of this program is to identify and even create experiences that are more meaningful or just more fun for us and our sighted traveling companions. Frequently, as people lose their eyesight, they become more and more isolated. The Tactile Traveler hopes to empower people not only to go literally around the world, but around the block to new adventures in their lives. Blind ranges from people who are visually impaired, and glasses and contact lenses no longer allow them to lead a normal life, to people like me, who are totally blind, to sighted parents with blind parents with sighted children, and blind parents with blind children, and people of all ages, interests, and physical abilities. On today's program, Help Wanted, audio describers, and describing other preparation and creativity involved in being an audio describer. Marianne Migliolelli was born totally blind, but it hasn't stopped her from going to the theater a lot.
I do. I love going to theater. I go to Denver Center for the Performing Arts. I go to BDT Stage. If a show interests me, I'm going to be there.
But when Marianne goes to the theater, it isn't determined just by when the play's being performed. It's when it's performed with audio description, which she listens to through wireless earphones. The audio describer tells Marianne and the other blind and visually impaired people in the audience what's going on the stage that they can't see, so they can enjoy the show. The theater's only one of many mediums where we can take advantage of audio description. It's always available on some television programs and in stadiums and arenas. You can also find audio description at some conventions, museums, video games, and even parades. And anywhere else, you can convince the people in charge that it would be a good addition to their business. There's so many places that use audio description, there's a shortage of audio describers. You could help fill that shortage by becoming an audio describer. But at the moment, you just can't go to your closest community college and sign up for a class.
That's tricky because there's like not one central, there's not like a schooling education track that one follows to become a pilot or an engineer. You kind of have to find your way organically.
That's Bonnie Barlow, who's been audio describing for 33 years.
Basically, I'll start Googling things about audio description and then their interests, whether it's in film or educational media or streaming content. And then you'll find someone who's been doing it and who can kind of help them figure out what all of those different things involve. When I train people, I like to really focus on what they want to learn to do because there's just so much. There's some real basics, and then there's a way to kind of mold those into the segmentation that you want to specialize in. So the basics are always the same. It's just a matter of how it's created and produced and presented that changes.
Bonnie says she has people call her to learn how to become audio describers who have never listened to audio description being used. So check out a movie at the multiplex. Ask for a pair of audio description earphones and experience audio description, maybe even with your eyes closed. Before you call to say what it's all about, it'll be like no job you've ever had. Until then, here's a sample of Bonnie Barlow audio describing a video entitled DePaul Deaf School Visits with No Barriers.
In a classroom, New York High School Division winners of a diversity and inclusion competition designed to spark the best ideas from students for building a world free of barriers and discrimination. Teens work together on a white fabric.
This Global Impact Challenge gives an opportunity, gives the jump start for kids to make a difference.
Two first place teams were awarded $5,000 by Wells Fargo to implement their projects.
We have selected you to be the grand prize winner for the middle school. Congratulations!
Team World Digs Fashion and Adaptive Threads have won the $5,000.
The kids receive a large Wells Fargo check. Brian McDonald, New York High School STEAM teacher.
Our students have worked from identifying problems in their own community, focused around inclusion and diversity, and have created proposals to solve those problems.
The winning middle school team is made up of five students from Windsor, Connecticut. They focused on making popular destinations, such as zoos and museums, more accessible for people who are blind or have low vision.
Some solutions we came up with were QR codes on the posters and signs.
Display labels and stuff, we could put like Braille there so people would be able to touch it and be able to figure out what's going on.
And models of objects behind the glass so you could actually get a feel for what they are.
The girls feel raised letters on a poster.
A lot of schools will come here on field trips and it's really just not fair that they aren't able to experience the same things that we are. So by implementing this project, we get to allow them to have that experience as well.
Scarsdale, New York. In a classroom, the winning high school team is made up of seven students from Scarsdale High School. They focused on creating adaptive clothing items that are easily accessible, functional, and comfortable for children with disabilities.
A lot of adaptive clothing lines only focus on people that still have some sort of mobility. We're focusing on people that can't dress themselves.
This project has greatly opened the eyes of our students by exposing them to a world that they have never had the opportunity to see. Most of our students who are working on these problems are non-disabled, so getting the new perspective that they've never had before and working and talking with people with disabilities has allowed them to start a new dialogue.
The students visited the Sunshine Children's Home, a facility that specializes in the care and rehabilitation of children with special needs.
We were talking to one of the teachers, and she teaches the oldest students, so high school age, so our age. And we were talking about the bibs that they wear. They call them shirt protectors to make it more dignified, but they're bibs.
Our students were really concerned about the other students' dignity.
We came up with the Quick Zip, which is a shirt that has zippers on both shoulders and down one of the side seams.
We also have a water-resistant material on the front that would kind of replace the bib aspect.
On the back, there's two strips of conductive fabric that interact with a positioning circuit to let the teacher know, hey, I've moved out of the position you want me in, because all these kids are nonverbal.
Having a real reason that we're doing it and having met with the people that we're designing for and knowing why we're going through this whole process, it just provides you the opportunity to make a better product.
Dennis Gallant, educator at Northeast Resource Center for Vision Education.
I think this experience has helped them to realize that they can achieve goals, even if they feel like at the beginning those goals are very difficult or almost impossible to achieve.
Lisa Yokana, STEAM coordinator.
I really do believe that it's not enough to just make more stuff, that they have to make stuff that makes a difference in the world. And watching that come to fruition, to see that it really can be done, it's empowering.
Every one of you in this room has brought your whole selves to this project, and it's really been amazing to watch.
It's given me a lot more confidence in what I'm able to do, so I feel like I'm going to be able to like put my ideas forward more and have the courage to say what I want to say.
Don't be afraid to like speak out and be confident in your ideas. Anyone can really do anything if they put their mind to it.
Even though they are young, they have that ability to really change things in their community.
We really are building student agency and helping them understand that they are the game changers. They are the future of the world, and they are going to be the ones who make a difference.
Want to make a difference in your community? Teachers and students follow the link to learn more or apply to the 2019 challenge at bit.ly/nobarriers-GIC2019. No Barriers and Wells Fargo.
Bonnie's job is to tell her audio description users what they can't see. But so much visual information is in front of her, she has to choose what will be most useful. A different describer may see things differently.
I like to say I don't just give people the information, I give them the experience. So I'm looking at all of the details and show conventions that the director and the lighting person and everyone else puts, the dancing, you know, choreographer, puts into it to kind of indicate, feel this here and then move on, and now feel that there because of what they're doing. I won't say what the feeling should be. I'll just say what I see happening that leads me to think or feel a certain thing. I don't give it away. We have to be very objective and respect, you know, the audience's ability to infer from what we're telling them, you know, the story.
If you're describing live theater, your work begins before the day or evening of the performance. You need to go to the play in advance so you can understand it in context, so you can write your script.
Because I have to watch it from beginning to end and know what, you know, where we're going as we go through. And so if there's a big twist at the end, there might be a few things that happen along the way that if I didn't mention them, it would make no sense to a blind person. I don't want to mention them in the wrong way or too much either. So I don't know if you've ever seen the movie The Sixth Sense. There's a twist at the end where someone finds out that they themselves have been dead all along and they didn't know it. And so they thought they were interacting with people. But when they go back and kind of show some of the scenes, we see that that person is actually just kind of there in a scene, but not interacting as he thought he was. And so all of a sudden, it becomes apparent to us, oh, that's why nobody was talking to him. So it's kind of like hindsight, you know? So I would just, in those previous scenes describing it, I would just say he's talking to the kid's mom in the living room. I would say he and the mother are both seated in the living room and turn toward the door as the boy walks in. So we make an assumption that they've been talking to each other, but we later find out, no, she didn't even know he was there because he was a ghost. So it's that kind of thing where, you know, I want to subtly access to those same clues that M. Night Shyamalan did, the director.
Bonnie Barlow's former student, Amy Ogden, has only been audio describing for about a year and a half since Bonnie Barlow trained her. But she's a very busy lady with a good sense of what blind theater goers need to know to follow the show.
I would like them to get a greater understanding of the story being told. So when I am doing theater, or even when I was doing videos for National Park Service, to describe an ancient artifact or to describe a scene, it helps a great deal to have all the visual cues. The dialogue can take you very far, but if someone is holding something in your hand and you don't know what they're holding, or if they are walking across a scene, you don't know what that scene is, you're not getting the full story. There's times you're going to be lost. And I think we all can, sighted or not sighted, relate to being in a situation where everyone around you is laughing or reacting, but somehow you've missed it and you don't know what it is. That's incredibly frustrating. And if you bought a ticket to go and share that experience, you should get the full experience, as equitable of an experience as is possible.
If you use audio description, get to the theater early, because your experience starts before the show.
And I start about 15 minutes early before the curtain rises, and I begin by giving background of the show, background of the creators of the show. I talk about what the stage looks like, and I read parts of the program, because that's exactly what the other patrons are doing. So I start by doing that. And then I'll tell them about the orchestra and the instruments in the orchestra, the number and the length of intermissions, any other pertinent information that could be helpful.
Audio description for movies and television programs is part of the soundtracks. But Amy says audio description for live theater has to be live.
For theater, it's extremely helpful to have it be live, because sometimes there's a mishap on stage, and such as someone goes to pull out a sword and only the handle comes out and the entire audience laughs and it's unplanned. But it's nice to know, if you are not able to see that, that that's what people are laughing at. So that's just one of the examples. I was reading about another audio describer that actually happened to her. And then when you're talking about a large traveling Broadway show, each traveling company, when they go out, when they're done with that tour, the next time it goes on tour, they change up the scenery. And sometimes they switch out the order and the number of songs they do. So to have it pre-recorded would be pretty difficult.
Amy and Bonnie are not just abstract voices that live in earphones. They have lots of live interactions with the people who wear those earphones.
I sometimes will wander around during intermission and find some of the patrons, ask them if they are hearing me all right, if they have anything that I could clear up for them, if they anything like that. And I also meet them after the show at Coat Check. And as people are checking in their devices, I ask them for feedback. And particularly helpful is what worked well and what could be improved.
When Amy's done getting feedback, she goes back to a soundproof booth somewhere.
In one of the booths in the back. Sometimes I'm in a sound booth. Sometimes I'm in the lighting booth. They can set me up various places. I've actually been outside of the theater with a live television feed just to make sure that I don't have any background noise leading into what I'm saying. It's wherever they set me up is where I work from.
And when she announces, she has to be careful not to talk over the actors, which can be tricky when she has a lot to describe in a very short time. That's why she has to spend so much time watching the show, writing her script.
I try incredibly hard. That's why I preview and write a script to not talk over the singing, unless they're holding a long note where I can add something like, just step backwards, fell over a rock, or something that everyone's all of a sudden going to react to. That would be pertinent to know during a song. I absolutely try not to talk over any dialogue, and that includes the lyrics.
Amy even does audio description for ballets, which has no dialogue.
In the beginning, it was a new challenge. I love it because I did have to learn the ballet terms because I never know which of the patrons listening to me are familiar with ballet. Perhaps they were sighted at one time and actually did ballet and knew all the steps, and those who have never been to a ballet. And so, for example, I would say something like, Cinderella holds the broom aloft with both hands as she spins and does battements. And then I would define that by saying, repeatedly lifting and lowering her straightened leg behind her. So I'm not talking down to someone who is familiar with the ballet terminology and already knows what a battement is. But for those who don't, they say, oh, she's repeatedly lifting and lowering her straightened leg behind her. So that's how I do ballet, and I enjoy it a lot. It's longer. The scripts are a lot longer. It takes me a lot longer to write them. But there is also freedom in that I don't have to work around dialogue. I still try very hard to not mow over the beautiful orchestra music all the time, because you're also there to hear that gorgeous music. And I try not to talk over a crescendo when the music gets very loud. So I try to always offer balance.
Amy brings a Barbie doll with her and finds blind members of the audience who aren't familiar with ballet and bends the arms and legs on the doll to show them what the ballet term she uses means. Blind audio description user Marianne Miglio-Elli says, sometimes blind audience members learn the moves directly from the ballet dancer.
I've also known of times when one of the ballet companies will actually have a couple of the dancers who are willing to be touched in appropriate ways and such, who will do something like stand on point and show particular moves or whatever, if they're comfortable with that kind of a thing, and possibly show the interesting costumes. When something is audio described, they will also do a tactile tour, or what's called a touch tour, so that blind people can actually touch props and set pieces and sometimes costumes and so on to get an even bigger, better understanding of the show. So we can, you know, we still get told about the sets and props and costumes and so on. But there's definitely something really special about being able to actually get our hands on things. Because no matter how well somebody describes something, there's nothing that replaces actually touching something that's really cool, that's a piece of set.
Before the performance begins, Amy describes the stage and part of what to expect and why. The kinds of things you'd read in a program.
One of the tiny things I would offer if they came to Colorado ballet's performance of Cinderella. For something like Les Mis, I start setting up the description 15 minutes ahead of curtain. I would say something like, the velvet front curtains on the stage are open. Narrow, grayish, three-story buildings stand on each side of the stage. The bottom layer level of the buildings feature dimly lit arched tunnels leading off to unseen streets and alleys. The second level on each building has a set of French doors with small metal balconies. The third levels of both structures display shuttered windows. The buildings and shutters are in shabby condition, in other words, not located in the best part of town. The entire backdrop is a painting of a dark, stormy skyline of the French countryside, featuring a shadowy, dark structure, possibly a castle. And down in the right corner of the giant painting is Victor Hugo's signature. And then I would even go on to give a little background and say Victor Hugo, in addition to writing Les Misérables and The Hunchback of Notre Dame, was also an artist, and over 4,000 of his drawings and paintings have been recorded and for display. The 25th anniversary production of Les Misérables, and it is featuring exquisite digital special effects, and some of those are showcasing Hugo's own paintings projected onto the backdrop throughout the show. So, and that would, I would get, be able to be that long-winded simply because that is when people are still finding their seats, and that is when everyone is leafing through their programs. I would note something about the orchestra. I would note the people playing the different characters, and I would talk about the appearance of the characters and their costumes.
Amy Ogden says, it's a lot of work, but it's also very rewarding.
It is very rewarding. Financially, it's not a moneymaker, and that's okay with me, because there's a lot of reasons they kind of need to watch costs on those things. For me, the reward is meeting the patrons after and getting feedback and continuing to hone my skill in this area. I enjoy picking apart the background information of something like Les Misérables and Book of Mormon, and it runs the gamut from the very serious to the very goofy. So I enjoy every minute of it.
If you're planning on going to a live performance, check in advance to make sure they'll have audio description when you want to go.
Usually with the run of a show, there is one, maybe two audio description days available. They are almost always matinees because it is a lot easier to get around in the middle of the day if you're especially low vision and lighting makes a difference. For very large shows, I believe Hamilton had something like 6 or 7 audio description shows available.
The American Council of the Blind's Audio Description Project Coordinator Tabitha Kenlon says the American Council of the Blind Audio Description Project has lists of museums and performing arts centers that offer audio description, as well as links to the UNI Description Project, which provides audio description for National Park Service brochures and for rainy days and quiet nights in. Their title catalog helps you discover which films and television series are audio described and which platforms carry them. The website can be found at adp.acb.org. That's adp.acb.org. Bonnie Barlow's email is bonniejbarlow@gmail.com. Amy Ogden's email is amyogden90@gmail.com. Pat Conroe helped with this story. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low-vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. Why, it's my talking scale, reminding us that we'd like you to weigh in on how we're doing. Please send us an email to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. We spell traveler the American way with one L. We'd also like to hear your story ideas from all over the world. Please send us an email with story ideas in the subject line to the Tactile Traveler at gmail.com. If you'd like to help underwrite this program, please send us an email with underwriting in the subject line to the Tactile Traveler at gmail.com. Transcripts of this program are also available for our deaf listeners by searching The Tactile Traveler in any search engine. This program is also being broadcast on the Audio Information Network of Colorado and in additional states. It's also available by typing The Tactile Traveler into any search engine. And it's available wherever you get podcasts. And by asking your smart speaker to play the podcast, The Tactile Traveler. We'd like to thank the following organizations and people that help make today's program possible. Be My Eyes, Microsoft Accessibility Tech Support, Apple Accessibility Tech Support, Leslie Steffens, Pat Conneroe, Lorraine Hutchinson, Debbie O'Leary, Sarah Williams, Sophia Williams, Kaylee Romero, and Wally Burley. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low-vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. This has been a production of KDNK Community Access Radio, Carbondale, Colorado.